The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk New York on WGBB here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue here. I'm taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 21st day of April, 2024. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is with us across the way, as always, and we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. In the leadoff spot, we'll welcome in 1986 world champion New York Met, former National League MVP Kevin Mitchell will join us. And in the second half, we will switch gears. We'll talk to actor and musician Keith Thibodeau, famous for playing Little Ricky on I Love Lucy and some other cool stuff. So we'll talk to Keith. Sit back, relax, get comfortable, enjoy Sports Talk New York tonight on GBB. Great people, great stories up ahead. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow me on Facebook. The page is called The Talk of New York Sports. There you'll find show information, sports information, some good stuff. Check that out. You can also follow me on X at BDonahueWGBB. And if you miss a show, no problem. They're all out on the website the next day at sportstalknewyork.com. And catch up anytime. Our first guest was a member of the 1986 world champion New York Mets and was a player on the great stage for that legendary Game 6, eventually won by the Mets. He was a two-time Major League Baseball All-Star, and he won the National League Most Valuable Player Award and a Silver Slugger in 1989. He led the league in home runs and RBIs. I'm happy to welcome back to the show tonight Kevin Mitchell. Kevin, good evening.
What's going on, my friend, man? It's just good to be back and hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to be back, Kevin. Yeah, I tell you. Now, growing up out in San Diego, did you have any sports heroes when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to always love the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I loved the Pittsburgh Pirates, Willie Stargell, you know, all those guys. That we are a family team, you know. That was the team I loved watching when I was a young kid.
Yeah, the Lumber Company, right, with Manny Sanguine.
Yes,
Clemente, all those guys. Yeah, great team. I used to love those uniforms, Kevin. The gold and black with the hats with the stars on them. I thought they were great.
Classics.
Yeah, definitely. Classics. Now, you were signed by the Mets at an open tryout. Tell us about that.
Well, I didn't think baseball was my game. I didn't, you know, it wasn't lively enough. I played football coming up. And I could have went to college and played football, but I didn't end up going. I ended up playing at San Diego State, facing Buddy Black. Didn't know who Buddy Black was.
Sure, Bud Black, yeah.
And ended up hitting two home runs off of me. And then I had a scout named Dean Youngworth come up to me and ask me, do you know who you was facing? I said, huh. And then he said, you hit two home runs off of him, and he's an ace pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. And I said, really? I said, that's what they got up there? That's slow. He was slow. You know, he was pitching slow. But that's how I ended up getting seen. You know, just playing around, you know, with the fellas at San Diego State.
Yeah, great story. Now, in your minor league experience, Kevin, is there any guy who helped you along the way to improve your game? Any coach or any even player, a colleague of yours who helped you along the way?
There was a coach, and I still talk to him at least once a week. Bob Schaefer.
Mm-hmm.
He guided me through my whole minor league season. You know, he was a great coach for me. I mean, he was a mentor, and he really helped me out through the lines coming up.
Now, when you were in the minor leagues, Kevin, I can't believe it's happening, but you still ran into race issues, and this was back in the 80s. Still happening.
Well, I don't know about, you know, we did run into it a lot, you know, but I didn't really care. I didn't really, you know, I ignored a lot of stuff that went around, you know, because I know what kind of trouble I can get in. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to piss nobody off and do the wrong thing. So I still stay out the way right now. So
yes, good way to be, Kevin. That's exactly right. Now, Gary Carter, he gave you the nickname World because you could play infield, outfield, all around. You were an evaluated player. And he always spoke fondly of your talents, Kevin, Gary Carter. Give us a few words about the kid.
Man, there's no words that could be explained about Gary Carter. He's such a exciting. He was always a fun player. I mean, you can come to the ballpark and not have a smile on your face, and you look at Gary Carter, he's always had a smile on his face. He was just happy to be there, man, every day, to do his job and go behind the plate, even though he had them bad knees. But, you know, he go and play this game like, you know, hey, like it didn't even bother him, you know.
Yeah.
Hurt. He was either hurt. As a matter of fact, he played hurt the whole time I was there.
Yeah, and there's a guy who left us too soon who is really missed around the world of baseball, especially here in New York. His big favorite.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt, man. He's a fun guy to be around, man. He was so exciting, you know, just he was a joy.
Yeah.
He was a big joy to be around.
Good way to put it. Kevin Mitchell with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, we'll talk a little bit about Game 6 of the 86 World Series. Now, we remember Wally and Keith had been retired for the first two outs. Now, you were called in to pinch hit for Aguilera after Carter, who we just spoke about, of course, got a base hit. Now, you went out there and you got a hit, too. Tell us a little bit about that at bat.
We're going to get that straightened out. Everybody thought I was in there making plane flights, but it wasn't true.
Okay.
It was never true.
Yeah, no, I read that.
I mean,
yeah.
you got to understand, as a rookie, I didn't make my flights.
Right.
The ball club paid for the flights.
Right.
So how can that be?
Exactly. Yeah, no.
We
won't even mention it. Now,
yeah.
You got a base hit. Now, did you know anything? Of course, you knew Schiraldi from the minor leagues. You sort of gave him a little smile when you came up. Did you know what was coming?
He always told me how he would pitch me when we was in the minor league. We were roommates in the minor league. And I took the first pitch, and I said, man, this guy is pitching me the way he says he's going to pitch me. But if I didn't look for that pitch and he threw me a fastball in, he probably would have drilled me in the face.
Yeah.
Because I was reaching over the plate to hit the slider.
Right, and he hung one.
Yeah.
And you got a base hit. Now, you end up your base running. Keith Hernandez was talking about your base running. He said you went to third base on a soft hit, and you scored on the pass ball. Now, Buddy, at third base, he was telling you to watch out for a wild pitch.
Oh, man, Buddy's a great – he's got so much baseball knowledge. I'm just sad to – what's going on with him right now.
Yeah.
Turned down.
A good man. Now,
oh, man.
Great man. He told you that Stanley was going to throw one.
He pulled me to the side. He said, I don't know Stanley. I'm a young kid. I'm a rookie.
Right.
And he said, you know, this guy known for bouncing balls. So be ready.
Right.
Sure enough, he had already let me know what was going on. And I was able to score.
Yeah, Gedman tried to block it. I don't think he could see it. And you didn't even have to slide.
No, I didn't. I sure didn't. Because the ball, I think the ball got past me.
Yeah.
The ball got past me. Yeah.
And then
he bounced a split finger in dirt.
Yeah. And that was the end of that story. And we all know how it ended with Mookie and Bill Buckner. But that was Game 6. And now the team wins the World Series. I believe there was a rainout, and you had to play the next day. What was the feeling on the ball club following the World Series with the guys that you had on that roster? You guys must have thought that you had something special, Bill.
We always did. Before the season even started, when we first started off in spring training, we had something special.
Yeah.
We had a whole another T roster on that bench that can play.
That's true.
You know, and we knew everybody on that team knew their role, what they had to do to help our starters get a break or whatever they needed to do. If it was my turn to play, I knew what I had to do to get in the game to match what was in there, you know, give our team a chance to win. You know, everybody knew their roles before they even, you know, got on the field.
Mm-hmm. And Davey, the leader, I mean, he treated everybody like men. He was a great skipper.
No doubt, man. I love Davey Johnson, man. And to this day, I was supposed to go see him because I know he's having problems with his legs.
Mm-hmm.
So up in Florida, and Davey's such a he was such a great man. He's a player's manager. He understands the players.
Right.
You know, as long as you went out there and you gave him between the white lines what you're supposed to give him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you can do what you want off the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give me 100% when you step between the white lines.
Right. And whatever else is your business, right?
It's your business.
Yeah.
It's your problem. When
mm-hmm.
you come see me, this is my team.
Right.
And that's the respect you got to give him. I mean, he told it how it was. He was really 1,000.
Exactly. Davey Johnson, guys. Good, great manager, folks. Now they broke the team up, Kevin. They sent you to San Diego. They don't re-sign Ray Knight, who was an integral part of that ball club. Did you feel good, at least, that you were going back home to San Diego?
Not at all.
Okay.
I had a family there. I had a family, man, and I learned a lot by being around good players like Keith Hernandez, Gary Carter. You know, guys like that, man, and I learned the game. And these guys taught me how to play, be prepared. You know, even though I wasn't a starter, to be prepared how to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I was going. I never thought they would break that team up after we won, you know.
Questionable.
At least give them a couple more years, you know.
Questionable move by Frank Cashin. That remains to be seen that decision was not a good one. Now, you go to San Diego, there's a lot of pressure on you because they want to replace the statistics they lose from McReynolds, who, of course, came to the Mets. You're replacing a star in Greg Nettles, and then you have a guy like Larry Boa at the helm who's kind of a perfectionist. So it must have been a rough go out there for you, Kevin.
No, it wasn't a rough go at all. I just didn't get along. I don't like disrespect at all.
Okay.
Larry Boyle was disrespectful.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
You know, to everybody on that team. Everybody on that team.
Interesting.
I mean, everybody see, I don't usually go out and bash nobody at all, but he was disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
We all men. We all got kids. Respect us as men. You ain't got to yell at us like we're little kids. We're not little kids.
Well,
you know, he was disrespectful. I mean, he got into a fight with Stanley Jefferson the first time we was there.
Wow. Yeah, another ex-Met, Stan Jefferson. Yeah, good guy.
Yeah, me, Stanley Jefferson, and Sean Abner came over together.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right, that was the deal. Yeah, so...
You know, just because, you know how Stanley Jefferson, he always smiling.
Right.
We had just lost a game in Pittsburgh, and Larry Boyle rushed him.
Oh, man. Yeah, you don't like to see that. As you say, Kevin, everybody's a man. Everybody's got a family. Give us a little break here, you know?
Yeah, disrespect. You know, I don't disrespect no man, man. Not at all.
Not at all.
You know, I give you the same respect as you give me.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
So nobody wanted to play for him. Benito, nobody. He made Joey Cora and them cry every day.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Alomar didn't want to play. Nobody didn't want to play for him, man.
Ugly situation. Yeah,
yeah, it was just rugby.
People
don't be knowing that behind the scenes what really went on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wanted to play for that man.
No, no good. That's Larry Boa, ladies and gentlemen. And we've heard some stories about him before. We're speaking with Kevin Mitchell tonight on Sports Talk New York. Then you get sent from San Diego to the Giants. People thought that Dave Dravecki was the key part of that puzzle, but you really emerged as the key ball player in that trade on San Francisco.
Well, I tell you what, Dave is one of the guys that I really love. He's a motionary speaker.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to him once a week too.
Yeah.
Check on him and his wife. I love that man, and my grandmother always loved him. So, but he was the main guy that talked me out of not walking away on that trip going to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was ready to quit.
An inspirational guy for sure, Dave Dravecki.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt. But
do you feel moving to the outfield helped your overall game, Kevin?
No. No. I mean, it didn't matter where I was playing. I mean, David Johnson gave me that chance to play every position on that field.
Right.
And I did that when I was a little kid. So, you know, as a kid, you play everywhere.
And that you
but
did.
But it didn't matter to me. I just wanted to play and hit. That's all I wanted to do.
That season in 89, folks, it was .291 batting average, 125 ribbies, 47 home runs. The Giants go to the playoffs. Kevin wins the National League MVP, which was the first time that award was won by a San Francisco Giant since Willie McCovey back in 1969. And just an amazing season.
Yeah, it was. It was a great season. I just talked to Will Clark this morning, and another good friend of mine, too. Everybody always got their opinion about how me and Will didn't get along. But, I mean, Will was, you love to play for the man on the field. You love to be with him on the field as a soldier. And Will pushed me to be a better player, too, as far as hitting. I competed with him.
Yeah.
Woody Mays always told me, you compete with Will, and that's how you guys get a relationship going. If he hit a single, you hit a double.
Mm-hmm.
You compete.
He always said good things about you, though, Will Clark. He had said, I've never seen a power hitter stay in a groove so long, he said about you, that you crushed balls, made it a lot easier for the rest of them, and that you were outstanding. And he was a great hitter himself, Will Clark.
Oh, man, come on, man. If Will can, we felt like this as a team. If Will can go out there and hit this guy hard, we can too.
Mm-hmm.
We was followers when it came to him, and he was a leader.
Yep. Good man.
And that's how we was. Yeah, he is. He's an awesome dude, man. I love the hell out of him. And I tell you what, I got so much respect for him.
Tell us a little bit, Kevin, about the play. Ozzie Smith's at bat, long drive. You overran the ball? Is that what happened? And you
No, we was playing Ozzie the bunt champ, so I was playing in the gap.
Ah, okay.
Straight away second. He wasn't Kelly. It was Kelly Downs that was throwing. I think it was Kelly Downs
who was
pitching. He wasn't supposed to throw him that split finger. You know?
Right.
Keep everything hard at him. He threw him a split finger. He was able to slice it down the line. You know, because we had him bunched. You know, so
yeah.
We had him gap to gap. We didn't have him hitting the ball down the line. So I ended up running over there. Realized I couldn't put my glove up. By the time I put my head up to see the ball, it was already on me. I just put my glove up, my hand up, and caught it.
Amazing. Yeah.
you remember those days you used to play in the boys' club as a kid?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have no glove.
Yeah.
You played wiffle ball, because I played a lot of wiffle ball, you know, at the boys' club.
Oh, so. Yeah. I know what that's like. Yeah, definitely, Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll catch it barehanded for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great one for the highlight films, and that'll follow you. That's a great play, and really admire that.
But I tell you what, I'm glad it was Ozzie, because he's a great man, and that's the only way that catch is remembered, because Ozzie was hitting. That was it.
The wizard, yeah.
The wizard. The wizard, a legend.
Now, you were involved in the World Series of 89, which is against the Oakland A's, and people may not know, there was an earthquake involved in that World Series, folks, and it interrupted the series, and it shook up a lot of people. What do you remember from that night in San Francisco?
Well, I just remember the lights. I was actually talking to Tony Phillips in the middle of the field. We was getting warmed up. and all I could see is the TVs and stuff blinking, shaking. You know, I'm thinking they had a power problem.
Uh-huh.
And they was playing that song, We Will Rock You.
Oh, man, what's crazy, yeah.
I thought it was the fans in right field in the bleachers that was making that loud noise, but the right field was actually cracking the steps up there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
What a mess.
It was just a rough situation, man. People started coming on the field taking stuff, man. I mean, you know, guys taking pictures of Steinbeck and Mark McGuire's wife. They was upset. Steinbeck didn't like that.
No, that's not right. Yeah.
Steinbeck ended up socking him up.
Yeah, no, that's an invasion of privacy. Yeah.
Yeah. She was upset, man. And that was real wrong for him to be taking pictures like that.
Yeah. Well,
you know, in a situation like that, man, that's not good.
Now, you played well for the Reds, Kevin. You had some great at-bats in Cincinnati. Then the strike comes along. You decide to go to Japan. That must have been a rough decision to decide to go to Japan.
Yeah, it was. But I thought I wasn't done playing baseball.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know how long that strike was going to last, and which I shouldn't have never did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Never been out of the States like that to play baseball, and it was just a different environment for me. And once I got hurt, they didn't want me to leave, and it was just a big mess. So I think every American that goes over there should have an American interpreter, because the interpreters are with their country.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So it's just a bad situation. You tell them to tell the owner stuff, they tell them something different. So.
Oh, man, yeah. So did that knee injury, Kevin, did that more or less end your career?
No, it didn't. I went and saw a doctor, the L.A. doctor.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name? In L.A., Dodgers doctor.
Not Frank Job.
Job. Yeah, I went and saw what happened was that the tear had tied itself around the break in my kneecap.
Oh, man.
So I end up, he said, well, Kevin, you're not going to do anything. I went back over there and end up finished playing. But they kept telling me what nothing wrong, and had this guy sticking pins in my knees and stuff like that. I needed a second opinion.
Right.
So I ended up flying home.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, when you're over there, then you're under their control.
Right.
You know, paparazzi's all over the place. You know,
got to think twice about doing that, right?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You know, they make it seem like everything is all gravy when you're watching it on TV and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for Americans.
Right.
Can't go in the clubs, no guy jeans. They don't want you in there.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no good, Kevin. Yeah, Kevin Mitchell with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Still, 234 home runs, 1,173 hits, Kevin. It's something to be proud of. That really is.
I don't think so, man.
Why not?
I just felt I didn't accomplish what I really wanted to accomplish in the game. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I got lazy. Yeah. Everything went downhill after that. So.
Yeah, I can understand.
I felt I'd done what I wanted to do, which I could have done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had so much distraction on my plate, you know.
Right.
It took me the other way.
I get it. Yeah. Well, what are you doing these days, Kevin? What keeps you busy?
I'm golf.
Yeah.
Golf, my man. Golf, 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 golf. Sundays. I usually play today, but I was tired from playing yesterday. yesterday.
Yeah. What do you shoot these days, Kevin?
I'm trying to get it back down to a 2-3 handicap. remember, I had a spinal cord injury.
Right.
That put me in nephrolysis.
Oh, boy.
So, but I'm doing good at it. I'm doing great, you know, as far as getting my body together and eating right and doing what I got to do to shape it back up. I'm an old man now, so I just realized that last year.
I hear you. Yeah, I'm right along with you. I know the situation. Yeah. You got to do the PT, Kevin. You got to keep the therapy going.
Oh, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've been going to L.A. to see this nerve guy. Shock treatment. The nerve guy. I do that every other Thursday. I do the lab work, do all the labs and stuff, and the IV, vitamins, every other Thursday.
Nice.
And just to get myself together. So, you know, just watch what I eat. A lot of sea moss, stuff like that, vegetables. I don't eat red meat, bread. So.
Cut that. Yeah, that's good. You cut that out, Kevin. You're doing good.
Yeah.
You're on the road. You're on the road, my friend.
Yeah. It's been
As you say, we're getting old. We got to take care of it.
I wish I'd have did that a long time ago. So.
Yeah, don't we all? I know, Kevin. I know exactly what you mean. Well, I tell you, Kevin, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us back here in New York. Stay well. Hit them straight. We wish you all the best. Feel good, Kevin.
I definitely will, my friend. It is always a pleasure talking to you. You know, I watch your show all the time, so, you know, I'm always on the air when you're on.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I get that notification you're on, so I just watch you sometimes, see what you're talking about. You know.
Even I don't know what I'm talking about sometimes.
That's
Kevin.
All right, man. it don't matter. As long as you're talking.
That's it. Once we stop talking, that's the end, right?
Hey, that's the end. It's everything, too. When you stop moving, everything stops moving. So
right.
You got to keep moving and grooving.
We got to keep going. You're exactly right, my friend. Well, you take care, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, my friend. You take care of yourself, and God bless.
You too. That's Kevin Mitchell, folks. Up next on Sports Talk New York, we switch gears, and we welcome in Keith Thibodeau. You might know him as Lethal Ricky from the I Love Lucy show. So stick around, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
All right, folks, we are back. We're back with Sports Talk New York on WGBB here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. I'd like to thank you guys for stopping by, hanging with us tonight. I happened to watch the Binghamton Rumble Ponies on TV before the Mets game today. I tell you, it was 44 degrees in Binghamton at game time in Mirabito Stadium. I thought it was Mirabito. It's Mirabito Stadium in Binghamton. As always, the Mets with their new City Connect jerseys will come your way on Friday night. Now, most of these uniforms are terrible. If you look around, you'll see the San Diego Padres looking like a birthday cake. The Southsiders, the Chicago White Sox, horrible. The Texas Rangers, horrible uniforms. The only one that is tolerable is Washington Nationals. Talks about the cherry blossoms on the uniform. And not good. So the Mets are showcasing those uniforms on Friday night. Not too bad. We got a taste of them last week. They're wearing them on, as I said, on Friday or Saturday. I don't recall when it is. But I guess the main reason for these things, folks, is to get you to buy them. So we must resist. We must have sales resistance and resist people. Resist these jerseys. They run you $175, but people tend to be sheep with these kind of things and just buy them anyway. That's it, folks. We're going to switch gears now, as we do on occasion. Our next guest, he's an actor and a musician. You would know him best as Little Ricky on the I Love Lucy show in the 50s, or if we move into the 60s, fans of the Andy Griffith Show will remember him as Opie's buddy, Johnny Paul Jason. We're also looking forward to talking and reminiscing with him. I welcome to Sports Talk New York tonight, Keith Thibodeau. Keith, good evening.
Hey. Good evening, Bill. How you doing?
We're doing good up here. Hope everything's good by you too, Keith.
Yes, sir. I just drove back with my wife from a David and the Giants concert in Florida, and we're headed to Brazil tomorrow.
Wow, not too bad. Yeah. Safe travels to you, sir.
Thank you.
Now, you were originally billed, Keith, as Richard Keith. Because Thibodeau would be too hard to pronounce for Desi Arnaz. Is that true?
That is true.
Yeah.
That's what Desi, you know, figured out and at the time. And, you know, he thought it was an unpronounceable name, you know. And so he said, you know, he developed the Richard Keith from Ricky. And then Keith is my name.
Right.
So that became my stage name, so to speak.
Now, at the age of three, Keith, you were pulling in $500 a week as one of Horace Heights musical nights.
Yeah, that was kind of a trip as a little kid to think about, you know, touring the nation in Canada with the Horace Heights band orchestra. That was a trip. I got to play with people like Lionel Hampton and Al Hirt, the famous trumpeter, was the first chair.
Mm-hmm.
His first chair. He discovered Art Carney, Gordon McRae, those actors. And that show, the Horace show, the Mr. Hyde show, ended up in California.
Mm-hmm.
And in California, we had a hiatus. During that hiatus, or that break in touring, I auditioned for the part of I Love Lucy's Little Ricky.
Tell us a little bit about the audition, Keith. How did that go?
Well, it was, you know, the first thing, my dad took me on the set, and the first person I ran into, bigger than life, was Lucille Ball. And she looked at me, and she looked at my dad, and she said, you know, does he have any acting experience? And my dad said, no, Miss Ball, he doesn't. And she goes, well, he's cute, but what does he do? I mean, is he doing it? And my dad said he plays the drums, so I began to play the Desi Arnaz Orchestra's drummer's drums, and the famous producer Sheldon Leonard came over, started listening to this little kid playing the drums, and then all the tech guys from the set kind of made their way near. And then finally Desi came by and heard all what was going on and started jamming with me on the tom-tom. And he stood up and laughed and said, I think we found Little Ricky.
Nice.
So they signed me to a 7-year contract with Desi Lou Studios. Mm-hmm.
What a great story. Now, Lucy Arnaz, Lucille's daughter, has said that you were part of the family, really.
Well, you know, in a way, we were like brothers and sisters. I met Lucy and Desi Jr. when I was 5 years old. Lucy invited me over to her home in Beverly Hills and wanted me to meet her kids. And, you know, Lucy didn't trust a lot of people that would come over, and I was one of the few that she did trust to be friends with her children.
Cool. Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how were Vivian Vance and Bill Frawley towards you? I mean, on the show, they were really fond of the character of Little Ricky. How did they treat you off set?
They were very nice. They were very nice. And, you know, all I can really say is it was professional. It was, a very nice atmosphere to work around them. And they were, you know, we were all part of the mix, part of the puzzle that made the I Love Lucy show. And I remember when I first called Lucy, I called her Miss Ball because my dad said to call her Miss Ball.
Uh-huh.
And she said, no. She goes, I want you to call me Lucy. Now, my name is Lucy, and it's Desi, and it's Bill, and it's Viv.
Nice.
There wasn't any, you know, last name, etiquette, but I heard about years later when she did her last television show, which was not that much of a success. She had got to the point where the actors were, they would call her Lucy,
mm-hmm.
and she said, it's Miss Ball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she changed the direction totally on that. But, it was a very professional. Lucy and Desi treated me like their kid. I was family. She told the stagehands, there was absolutely no cussing or cursing around when Keith was around. And, she was very protective in that way and made sure that I was, birthday parties were honored and recognized and she would give me gifts. She gave me two sets of Gretsch round badge drums.
Wow.
That I still have the set today, one of the sets today, and it's just they were very, they did treat me and brought me in as part of their family,
mm-hmm.
and I spent many many weekends and I went to their ranch and to their Del Mar home on the beach, Palm Springs, and then of course Beverly Hills. Just lots of time with them, and so a lot behind the scenes, let's put it that way.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that about Viv and Bill, if I may. I'm a big fan of William Frawley. I thought he was one of the best on the show. I always look forward to a movie on Turner Classic that has Bill Frawley. He'll show up in a lot of movies, I'll tell you that. He had a pretty distinguished career. I just want to ask you, Keith Thibodeau with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. My sister has a favorite line of Little Ricky's that she always repeats on occasion, and it is, "Mommy, I'm nervous." could you say that one time for her?
"Mommy, I'm nervous."
Yeah, there you go, Laura. Okay. That's it. Now, how about the guest stars on the show? Like, one, for instance, I'd love to hear about, Keith, is George Reeves.
Oh, yeah. He was literally my hero and every other little kid my age. And,
oh, yeah.
Generation's hero. So when he came on the set, I was introduced to him, and I shook hands with him, and he was literally big, like a giant.
Yeah.
And I shook hands with him, and I thought in my to myself, I said, "Gosh, he's really super," you know. And I was really believing this guy was super, but acting mind, of course, I knew that he was, it was kind of reality. Merge of reality and fantasy,
Yeah.
But and it was such a treat to have him on the set all that time. You could tell he genuinely liked kids and spent time, with us and just talked, and it was fun.
Nice. I was a big fan too, Keith. I mean, I just watched it today. It's on Heroes and Icons station, still on repeats. Still George Reeves, a great guy. Now, Lucy liked to use a lot of Hollywood character actors on the show, like Hans Conried, Charles Lane. People will remember him as Lucy's accountant and is also the guy that's with Fred Mertz when little Ricky is born and says that he has nine girls now. He later showed up on Andy Griffith, too. Do you have any stories about these great character actors?
Well, you know, are you talking about Floyd the barber
Andy Griffith? Sure, different guys, yeah.
Yeah, Howard Morris, right? No, Howard, McNear.
All right, Howard McNear. Howard Morris, I think, was Ernest T. Bass.
he was a trip, too. I got a chance to work with him. He was a mess, man.
Yeah. I love that guy.
Oh, gosh, he was so funny. They had so many different, you know, character actors that were, you know, later on in other shows and you know, had longevity as that. And that was the cool thing about that era is that of the character actors that they had. And you'd see them in different movies and television shows, and it was just like, oh, yeah, that guy, you know, that guy plays a tough guy all the time.
And that's what my sister and I joke sometimes and say there were only five actors back then. They were all on I Love Lucy. They're all on Andy Griffith, and you turn on a movie on Turner Classic, and there they are.
it's like you know, you got the guy who's always the waiter, you know. Who's always, it's kind of funny.
Keith Thibodeau with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, when little Ricky gets the birthday call from Italy, and the little guy who messes up John Wayne's footprints, that's not you, is it?
No, that is not. The way I describe my part in it is that I tell people if little Ricky says anything, talks, has a line, or plays the drums, or sings, or dances, or that kind of junk.
Right.
That's me. Mm-hmm. The others were the infant and toddler, the Simmons and Mayer twins.
Ah, okay.
Who were that little Ricky.
Understood. Okay. Now, what would you say your favorite episode was that you appeared in on I Love Lucy? Because you got to remember, folks, Keith was also in the Connecticut episodes along with the episodes in New York City.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the Lucy Desi Comedy Hours, which were the extended versions of the I Love Lucy show.
Right.
And they were in the hour format, which was filmed with one camera instead of three cameras, like the sitcoms, and like the I Love Lucy show was shown. It was not in front of a live audience, but I did enjoy the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour episode of Marie Chevalier. The last episode I was on with Ernie Kovacs and Ernie Kovacs and his wife Edie Adams.
Oh yeah, right.
And, I mean, the whole plot was that, you know, Ernie was interested. He was a producer. He was interested in me playing the drums because I could play the drums and wanted me for some his show or whatever. And Desi was thinking it was him, but then it ends up being me. And it was just, and then we did a number with Edie Adams, and she was, singing, and it was just a cool ending to the I Love Lucy show. That was actually the last episode of the I Love Lucy, Lucy Desi Ricky, or Lucy Ricky Fred Ethel format. Little Ricky.
Yeah, and sorry to see that end. That's for sure. Now you go to Andy Griffith, Keith, and how was your relationship with Ronnie Howard when you were working with him on the show?
Yeah, we had a blast as kids. We very much enjoyed each other's company. I thought Ron Howard was the nicest kid actor I'd ever met. And, you know, just working with Ron and other kid actors like Dennis Rush, who played Howie.
Right, Howie.
Who joined us a little later on. But, yeah, we all got along very well. And, you know, we would hit the cafeteria or the commissary, and Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore would be in the next booth.
Nice.
And, yeah. And you know, it was just a normal kind of thing, and we'd be, you know, playing baseball or playing catch, you know, on the lot. And just the whole show, Andy Griffith's show, was such a opposite, you know, experience than the Out of Lucy show for me. Lucy was very much, you know, a very intense, very energetic show. It was filmed mostly before a live audience.
Right.
And then Andy Griffith was shot on the same lot, Desi Lou, but it was more of a laid-back, southern kind of vibe, because they really were kind of who they were on the show in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pleasure to work on that show.
Yeah. Do you still have contact with Ron Howard today?
Yeah, well, not really. He's about 3 years younger than me, or 4 years younger than me. And, so we didn't hang out off the set. We only hung out on the set.
Got you.
And, he asked me to do a documentary that he was doing on, I think, the Isle of Lucy show with something, or producing it. And I wasn't able to do it. And that was the last time, you know,
You heard from Ronnie, yeah. I just want to say, and I'm sure I echo the words of other people, what's the deal with Helen Crump? Man, get off it already. She's so miserable. I mean, even as a teacher.
He's to lighten up.
Yeah, she's getting jealous with Andy over everything. She's always on the backs of you kids. Come on, Helen.
Yeah. Oh, give us a break.
Exactly. How about Don Knotts? Don Knotts looks like he's a great guy to work with, Keith.
He was fun. You know, we got a kick out of him, all of us, you know, Ron and whoever was on the show with us. And we just got tickled, you know, when he'd do a scene, and, you know, like the history scene where, you know, Andy's telling us about the history lesson. Because we're not interested in history, so he tells this elaborate story of the shot that was heard around the world.
Right.
Yeah, remember that? And then Barney, you know, we say, hey, can we hear that again? And Barney says, yeah, I want to hear it again.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Will you help us?
Whatever. Would you help us? I don't even know the line. But
yeah, something about the history. And Barney says, will you help us?
Yeah. Will you help us?
that was a great line. Yeah, that truly was. And that is another show, like I Love Lucy, Keith, where every actor is tremendous. I mean, from Otis to Howard, as Floyd, Jim Nabors, everybody was a tremendous part. And then how they developed Ernest T. Bass to come in on the situation, it was pure genius. I know he's worked on a lot of shows, Howard Morris, and those episodes with Ernest T. are just amazing.
Oh, they're classics. I mean, you know, it's so funny because he was from like, I think he was from Queens or Brooklyn or something.
I'm going to have to look that up. Yeah, I don't know.
And so he really had this New York accent, you know, talking in real life. But he captured the mountain crazy guy, you know, hit Otis, not Otis, but Ernest T. Bass. He just captured that part.
And, oh, yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing about it, there's actually, you know, there's people like that in the world, you know.
Yeah.
That's what's so funny about it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know that there are people that are kind of like that, you know?
Yeah, the way they invented that, the Darlings, I mean, it was just an amazing show. Another line of ours that's a favorite is Ernest when he goes to the singles meeting and he says, "How do you do, Mrs. Wiley?" Just that's all they taught him to say, so he keeps repeating, yes. "How do you do, Mrs. Wiley?"
Everybody's Mrs. Wiley.
Now, the band David and the Giants that you had, tell us a little bit about that band.
It's a band that started, you know, I joined them in 69, mm-hmm. and I was 19 years old. We were a rock band from Laurel, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the band had Capitol Records and United Artists. You know, we were on some labels, had some regional hits, and was popular a little bit in England with the Northern Soul. And it was a well-known band, and we played until, you know, mid-70s, and I left in the mid-70s. I married, you know, my wife of 48 years almost, Kathy.
Nice.
And yeah, and I'm blessed. And we came back. I became a believer. I became a Christian, a believer in Jesus in 1974 when I was 24 years old, and witnessed to the guys about Jesus. And then they came actually into faith several years later, mm-hmm. and we began Christian band in 1979 with me playing the drums, and played for the decade of the 80s. We disbanded. I left in 1989, and then we got back somewhere around 2009 for a reunion concert. And then we've been doing, you know, various, you know, concerts. We just did something, two concerts this past weekend in Florida. And we're doing one for actually an Andy Griffith Festival right outside of Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow.
In June. Yeah.
So. Nice. And then go ahead, Keith. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What we should.
I was going to ask, in 1977, I read where you were asked to join, people may remember, the band Starbuck, who had a hit with the song Moonlight Feels Right. Now, people my age will remember that. Did you join that band?
Yes. When my wife and I were first married, I called Desi, and we were going to start a band with Desi Arnaz Jr., or I was going to start a band with Desi Arnaz Jr., but it didn't work out. I mean, we talked, we met, we did things, but he was pretty heavy into his acting career at that point. So, I had left David and the Giants and just got married. I didn't know what was going on. I needed a change.
Mm-hmm.
So, we were in California, and I was beginning to play with some bands, just some local little club band type of, you know, supper club bands around there just to make some money. And Starbuck was playing at Six Flags, this band that had Moonlight Feels Right. And I had played previously with a couple of guys in the band before, and so when I called, I got in touch with them, and they gave me tickets to see them play at Six Flags, and then approached me afterwards and asked me to be the drummer. They said they were, you know, looking to get another drummer, and would I join them, you know? And I said, mm-hmm. sure. I said, that would be awesome. So they said, well, you know, they gave me some money to go down to Atlanta, Georgia. You know, I went to their office in Beverly Hills, their agent or their manager, and proceeded to rehearse about 2 weeks with them, and I got fired.
Oh, boy.
For the first time in my life. And I was so angry, you know, I was thinking, I mean, first time I ever get fired, you know, from drumming, you know, I never got fired from drumming. But it was just, you know, I'd become a Christian, and I could see that they were in a different life style than I was, and it just wasn't gelling. And they, mm-hmm. you know, when you get in a band, it's got to be like a marriage. Everybody has to be on the same page, and it just did not work out. I just couldn't get it. I felt uncomfortable, and my wife you know, she was, she cried and, you know, cause I took, taking her from Mississippi to California. Now we're back in Georgia and now we're leaving there. And, I said, you know what? I said, this is the very best thing that could ever happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
I said, God has a purpose for us.
Right.
And I just knew that, you know, even in the midst of just the anger and the tears. And so we left, went back to Mississippi, and I finished a little bit of college and was playing in jazz bands around here in Jackson, the capital. And then by this time, David and the Giants, became believers and Christians and started a Christian band, and they asked me to join them. And I said, I'm there.
There you go. The rest is history. Well, Keith, it was great reminiscing with you tonight on the radio. We thank you for stopping by, spending some time with us up here in New York. Safe travels to Brazil. I hope you guys have a great trip. And once again, yes. I thank you for stopping by.
Hey, always a pleasure, Bill. God bless.
That's Keith Thibodeau, ladies and gentlemen. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk New York. I'd like to thank my guests, Kevin Mitchell and Keith Thibodeau, my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you guys for joining us. I'll see you on Sunday, May 5th, next time around. Till then, be safe. Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.